Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. This is the Progressive Commentary Hour. Each week at this time, we take on a subject generally not discussed in any major way by the mainstream media and bring on individuals who have particularly unique insights into the problem and its solutions. Today, a special on HIV, AIDS, HIV drugs in children, and the case of the Nagels in Minnesota. Joining me today will be Steve and Cheryl Nagel. They are the grandparents of Rico Martinez Nagel, the son of their adopted daughter, Lindsay Nagel, who was adopted by from Romania. And although testing negative for HIV in Romania, she tested positive upon arriving in the United States. In December of 2012, Lindsay gave birth to a son, Rico, refusing to have the child tested for HIV. As we'll hear today from their story, the infant was eventually abducted by the state. It wasn't for some days later when they found that the child was in the hospital being tube-fed and receiving AIDS drugs, including AZT. Join me to discuss this will be additional panelists, including Celia Farber. She is a journalist who has covered the HIV wars extensively since 1987 in various magazines. Some of these writings are collected in her book, Serious Adverse Events, An Uncensored History of AIDS, published by Melville House, now Random House. Activist Michael Kalin called Farber the best AIDS journalist in the world. Her 2006 article for Harper's Magazine detailed the totalitarian corruption of the HIV-AIDS research that goes on all over the world. Joining her also will be Dr. Andrew Manitowis, and he is from Illinois. He is the science and biomedical consultant for the Cures Within Reach, formerly the Goldman Partnership for Cures, and serves as a consultant for the Office of Medical and Scientific Justice in Los Angeles and the National Vaccine Information Center. Earlier, he was an assistant professor of pathology and the director of melanoma and breast cancer research, University of Illinois Medical School in Chicago. Over the years, he has held research associate positions at the University of California, Berkeley, where he received his doctorate, Harvard University, and Washington University School of Medicine. He has also been a leading scientific challenger in the rethinking AIDS community. He has been consulting for the Nagel family and was a consultant for the U.S. heavyweight boxer Tom Morrison when he had tested positive for HIV and was prevented from competing, later to find that Morrison was negative. His website is andrewmaniotis.wordpress.com. And finally today, we will have Dr. David Rasnick. Dr. Rasnick, who will be speaking with us from Berkeley, California, is a medical research specialist in AIDS, cancer, protease inhibitors, and clinical diagnostics. He was the first scientist to synthesize peptides of a particular type, the fluoromethanes, inhibitors of cysteine protease used to destroy tissue related to arthritis, cancer, and various parasites. In 1978, he helped establish the Diagnostic Chemistry Group at Abbott Laboratories and was a founder of the Enzyme System Products at that facility. After leaving the pharmaceuticals as a senior scientist, along with his colleague Dr. Peter Duisberg at the University of California, Berkeley, he further developed the theory of cancer, which pertains to chromosomal imbalance. And over the years, he's been a sharp critic of the current dominant AIDS hypothesis. And he's been a former president of the group Rethinking AIDS and was a member of the Presidential AIDS Advisory Panel of South Africa, started under President Mbeki. His website is davidrasnick.com. Nice to have you all with us today.
Thank you, Gary.
It's been a long time.
Let's begin. Thank you. Let's begin with Steve and Cheryl, because it's your story that brings us all together, and your daughter. Take us through what has happened and what the state has done so that we have a large overview.
Thanks for having me on, Gary. Lindsay and Cheryl had to go off to Rochester tonight because Rico needs his fourth blood transfusion now in the last 2 weeks, and they now have realized that they need to change the treatment. So Cheryl's not with me tonight, but I'm happy to be on. This all started 22 years ago when we adopted Lindsay from Romania, and she tested positive when we got her back to America. So now I'm going to roll forward 22 years later. Lindsay is pregnant, and she's seen over at the Mayo Clinic for the 9 months, and she's going to go through their midwife program, which is part of the Mayo Clinic. At their first meeting, they wanted to do a battery of tests. Lindsay asked to have the HIV one taken off because she's sick of people bantering her, and she explained to the midwife or the nurse, whichever it was, why she wanted that taken off. So she told her whole story that she was HIV positive. Never heard another word about HIV until 15 minutes after the baby was born. At that point, we had three doctors marched in. Now, this is literally 15 minutes after she's been in 36 hours of labor. They march in and demand that Lindsay be tested for HIV and that the baby be tested for HIV. Lindsay declined. Then they came back. They had a social worker, a Mayo Clinic lawyer, and two doctors. The Mayo Clinic lawyer had already, we live in a different county than Mayo Clinic, so he had already given all this information to Moore County, county attorney, and they had already started drawing up the paperwork to remove the baby at this time. So Lindsay said, no, we're not gonna go through with this. We're not gonna give the baby treatment. We're not gonna test him. So the lawyer walks out of the room dialing his phone, and we discussed it for about 5 minutes, and I said, Lindsay, I said, they're gonna get this order, but the lawyer had already said she would be listed as having put a child in child endangerment, which would go on to her record. So I said, we're not going to achieve anything by not doing this because they're going to go ahead and do this. So they called the lawyer back up. I said, we'll go ahead with this, but make sure that nothing's going to happen with Moore County. He gave me his word that, no, this is where it stops. So the baby was immediately put on AZT. Baby tested positive by their test, which is really just the antibody test. We already knew that Lindsay tested positive. Lindsay didn't get to hold the baby until 2 days, 3 days later. And so we kind of, we went back and forth with the doctors on this. The baby's getting treatment the whole time, but we agree to give the treatment against our will, because we had taken Lindsay off from the same treatment that she had had when she was a baby. She was on it for 22 months. She started developing a lot of AIDS symptoms at that time. We took her off, and she lived for 22 years, obviously. She'll be 23 in October. And at that time, when Lindsay was listed as having AIDS in Minnesota back in 1990, there was a total of 12 children that fit that definition in Minnesota. There weren't very many children at that time that tested HIV positive and had AIDS, supposedly. Out of that group, there's only one left alive. The longest any of them lived was to be 6 years old. Lindsay's the only one that's still alive, and she was the only one that was taken off the drugs. So we have a pretty good stand on why we want, why we are against these drugs. So we bring, finally get the baby home. It was kind of tough because the baby hadn't eaten he had been nose fed for about the first week, so it was tough to get him breastfeeding. But they had breastfed and used the bottle for 11 days. We brought the baby home. We had him home here for 5 days, and everything was going great. Lindsay and Lindsay and Cheryl and John, her fiance, and the baby went to Minneapolis, and then they were going to go get a second opinion. And CPS called and said they wanted to see the baby in an hour. I said, you can't see the baby in an hour, because they wanted to see him take his meds. I said, they can't do that because they can't physically be here. I said, they could be here in the morning. You can come see him, take him in the morning, because they take him twice a day, 6 o'clock in the morning, 6 o'clock at night. So I said, okay, that's fine. They set up the meeting for 3 o'clock. They walk in the door with the sheriff and take the baby literally off from the feeding breast of the mother with no way to feed this baby. They had never even thought of that. So immediately they had to take the baby back to Rochester, put another, feed him through the nose again with a tube. The doctors didn't like that because he would occasionally pull the tube out. And when they removed the baby, we didn't know where he was at for 72 hours. We didn't know he was put back into the hospital. So they're feeding him for probably about the 72 hours, and then they decided that they wanted to put a G-tube, a gas strip tube, in him. So now that we have no control over what they do to this baby, now the county has control. The county says, go ahead and do it. They put it in. Mayo Clinic put it in wrong. It leaked on both sides. So now we've got stuff that's inside the baby that's not inside the stomach, and that's still a problem. So they redid the tube the second time, and right now, as of tonight, he's still laying in a hospital. He has a bloated stomach like little African babies that you see on TV. We listened for 6 days how they said that he was sucking on a pacifier so hard that he had sucked in the air that bloated his stomach up as tight as a basketball, and for 6 days they went with that theory before they looked for infection. Now, 2 days ago, he was about ready to come home, and then all of a sudden his white blood cells were high, which is an indicator of infection. So that's kind of a quick story of where we're at today. This child is laying. He's spent his whole life laying on his back staring at a fluorescent light. He's in very frail condition, and that's where we're at today.
All right. We appreciate you sharing that overview with us. We're going to go to Stephen Rasnick here, David Rasnick here. David, I have several questions that are very germane to what is happening now. First, we have been led to believe with a new article today that they have for the first time cured a baby who tested positive with HIV using a whole combination of antiretroviral cocktails. What about the science that shows the natural reversion to an HIV negative status? They didn't even mention this. Also, talk about what you know about what happens when you start giving protease inhibitors, AZT, or any other anti-AIDS drugs to a baby that doesn't even have a developed immune system. Could you go into that for us, please?
Yes. I thought it was very interesting, this news headline about this infant that they cured, supposedly, HIV. And I must say that under normal circumstances, I would consider this just a coincidence. But with AIDS, I'm beginning to think that these coincidences aren't real. There's something behind it. We have this, I was going to ask Steve if what the media coverage is in Minnesota about Rico and Lindsay, and if they're getting any coverage there. This is a real life and death story that's going on. It's a very, very important story, and it's real. And journalists, I'm sure you would be willing to talk to just about anybody. But now we have this media report, Wall Street Journal, New York Times, probably on television everywhere, about this curing this infant. And there's no scientific publication on it. It was just released, I think, at a meeting. Even some of the mainstreamers are skeptical about it. So before I go into the toxicity of these drugs, I'd like to hear what Steve says about the media coverage in Minnesota.
Steve?
What on the media.
Yeah.
because we were warned that we would be kicked out of the courtroom if we did go to the media. They threatened again to remove the child for another 75 days because 2 weeks ago he was going to get out of the hospital and they didn't have a place to put him. I said, if you do that, I said, I'm going to make you all famous. So they backed off that issue. So when he gets out, he will come home. As far as the media, we just had WCCO, which is the largest TV station, CBS affiliate in Minneapolis, did an interview today. That will air tomorrow night at 10 o'clock Central Time. We've got our local ABC is coming in tomorrow at 10 o'clock to do an interview. So we've got a lot of stuff that's going on right now. There's a lot of stuff on the web. I happen to have been in a town of 27,000 tonight eating supper, and three waitresses didn't know who I was, were standing behind the counter discussing this. So it's breaking out right now. We had to hold it back because we had threats over our heads, and I just decided, right, you know what, I've had enough.
Right, right. I tell you, that YouTube video that you took just about broke my heart. I almost couldn't finish watching it, but I felt it was my duty to watch that and read Celia's article all the way through. It was not easy. It was difficult. Now, let me get back to Gary's other question about, the toxicity and the testing of these infants. First of all, it's complete nonsense, even based on the mainstream's statements that you cannot test for antibodies in infants, newborn infants, because they share the antibodies with the mother. And so there's no real way to do an antibody test on an infant that is meaningful in any way at all. The other thing is the drugs that they're giving these this infant who was perfectly healthy. The child was perfectly healthy, breastfeeding. You could see it on that video, the YouTube video. And now they took that infant away, took it away from breastfeeding, the most nutritious, most healthy way to feed a child. Stick the tube in the little baby's belly, and they put these drugs in this child. I saw that list of drugs, nucleoside analogs. I think there's a protease inhibitor in there. Extremely toxic drugs, black box labeled drugs that are carcinogenic. They destroy the mitochondria in cells. They cause a whole host of problems. And I tell you, I am afraid that if that child is not taken out of the hands of the medical professional, that child is going to be dead very soon.
One more follow-up question for you, David. Based upon your decades of research in the field of AIDS, what is the reliability of the HIV antibody test that was used to begin with?
It's completely unreliable. All you have to do is lay your hands on an insert that comes with any of the HIV antibody tests, the ELISA test, the Western blots, the viral load test, and they tell you that, first of all, there's no such thing as an HIV test. There's no such thing as an AIDS test. And, in fact, with the ELISA test, there's no such thing as a test for antibodies to HIV because there is no reference standard. They don't know if the antibodies that react positive on these HIV ELISA tests actually are detecting antibodies that have anything in the world to do with HIV. They say that in those inserts that come with those tests. So the tests are totally bogus. They should be outlawed, those tests should be.
All right. Please hold on, David. We're going to come back to you. Now we'll go over to Dr. Andrew Maniotis. Nice to have you with us.
It's been a long time, Gary. It's been too long. It's a pleasure being on your show.
Thank you. Take us through, for the audience that may not know, the challenges that exist from legitimate, highly credentialed scientists, physicians, and activists, the problems we all have as AIDS dissenters with the existing scientific paradigm for diagnosing and treating persons with the HIV AIDS syndrome.
Well, that's pretty easy to speak to. It's great to hear you, Steve, and I'm glad you're on this show. And my heart goes out to your family again, as we've been discussing it every night and every morning and whatnot. To answer your question, Gary, just to say it simply off the bat, as a credentialed scientist and everything else, you call me, all right? And I hope you do that with, you know, some tongue-in-cheek. The problem is AIDS is not a viral illness to begin with, okay? And what's going on today with this new news release about the baby in Mississippi is what they call, just what was going on with the Contras. It's called perception management, you know? Because every case we've looked at and looked at carefully and done extensive medical record checks shows that none of these people die of a viral illness. There's a famous case, and it is no accident or coincidence, as David mentioned, that this story is coming out as the Nagels are preparing to have their news releases coming out, because they'll point to one baby and say, hey, we cured this baby of HIV. Due to a, you know, 30 hours after birth, we pelted the child with carcinogenic drugs and cured it. And, you know, this is the second time in history, they'll say, because of Hutter from Germany, the Berlin case that they discuss. And they don't even get it right in the New York Times. They don't even get it right because they say there's only been one before. Well, there's been two that they claim before, and both of them had bone marrow transplants in addition to extensive chemotherapy for cancer. One of the patients died, the other one is still alive, and they cured him of his HIV antibody signal. And this is why it's not a viral illness. The drugs, they kill the T cells and other cells, that, especially B cells, that make the antibodies that are read on the tests. And so these doctors are jumping up and down due to AMFAR's support, and AMFAR has a long history with cancer and AIDS. So, you know, what do these people die of? Well, Christine Maggiore, one of our people, she died of tubular necrosis. Her daughter, who they claim she infected, died of amoxicillin reactions. Mary J. Hanford died of liver failure due to nevirapine. Maria Papagiannou of Greece, who was Woman of the Year, she died of liver failure and her spleen exploded. Lombros Papantonio in the State Department, who was also accused of having HIV, he died of an Ambien overdose. Carrie Stokely, a perforated bowel. The Zapata case was acyclovir, AZT, and CHOP therapy. The daughter died of a botched pneumothorax. Arthur Ashe died of AZT. Nureyev died of AZT. Bergalis died of AZT. Allison Gertz died of, not AZT, but DDI, because she was allergic to AZT. Now we're here with baby Rico, who was given three vaccines earlier in the week, the MMR, DPT, and Hep B, followed by a fourth transfusion that he's receiving tonight, which is diagnostic or almost predictive of trolley, which is transfusion-related lung injury. All right, they've taken this baby out of a perfectly healthy family, and they have subjected him to a drug that's on the California chemotherapy prevention list, AZT, that was put there in 2009. And the other drugs are no better, as David mentioned. So as an academic, to answer your question, when I hear of this kind of torture, it's nothing less than torture to a family, a perfectly, Midwestern, Garrison Keillor type family who, you know, adopted a daughter from Romania out of the largesse of their human soul. And the daughter was negative in Romania, probably got vaccinated on the trip over across the ocean because they don't let people in this country without vaccines. And then tested positive. As we know on the package inserts, as David said, you'll see right there that a number of vaccines evoke a HIV positive signal. So the mother probably never was HIV positive, and she probably isn't. And it goes back to the first thing I said, which is that it is not a viral illness. AIDS is caused by doctors. And even Anthony Fauci, he's part of this perception management campaign, I believe, as is Matilda Krim, and I will say their name on the air because these are the people who have mobilized these smear campaigns against perfectly normal, healthy American families to promote their AIDS agenda, which is an agenda of genocide, and it's an agenda of iatrogenocide, to just line the palms of people making these drugs and continuing the fear tactics and the insanity that is part of what is known as the AIDS era.
Okay. I prefer that no one be named by name if they're not here to defend themselves, as I would not allow, if they were here, you to be attacked in your absence. I believe that people have a right to their opinions, and they can be right or wrong in what they're doing on AIDS. No one knows what's in the mind of these individuals who promote these heavy toxic drugs. No one knows what's in the mind of someone who advocates for the pharmaceutical approach only. No one knows what the real motives are of someone who attacks the dissidents as if they are AIDS denialists, equating them to Holocaust denialists. But in a country that honors free speech, let us honor also the diplomacy that goes with that and not step over that line. Instead, let's just focus upon what we can do to deconstruct their arguments, their paradigm.
Probably the best thing you can do, Gary, is just look at AZT's membership on the California carcinogen list as a simple response to these independent-minded Americans and say, well, why would you give a carcinogen to a newborn baby? I'll just leave it at that.
Okay. Please hold on, Andrew. We'll come back. Now let's say hello to our final panelist, Suya Farber. Hi, Suya.
Hi, Gary. It's a pleasure to be back on the show.
Thank you. So you've written an article in defense of this family and their daughter and their granddaughter. We've seen this many times in the past. What generally happens is that when an educated family who knows the risks of a particular medical therapy decides to opt out of it, then social services are brought in and frequently treats the parents as if they were engaged in child abuse and can charge them as such, even having parents arrested. In all these cases, the child is removed and taken away to protective custody, which means into an orphanage of some form, a state-controlled environment. But no one ever asks, the media never asks, what happens in those environments? What are they like? Are they little children's gulags? What are they like? Is this like something out of Dickens, England, of an orphanage? Well, we find out that they also, at these places, there's sexual abuse, there's neglect, there's human experimentation, there's testing of experimental vaccines on these children because they have no advocates. The state's not their advocate. The state could care less. And so beyond this veil of secrecy, what happens to that child each day? Why isn't it in the arms of a mother that loves the child and is healthy herself and could breastfeed? The state is virtually indifferent. They're like technocrats. They absolutely go through the motions without ever stopping and thinking of the consequences. Because let's face it, there are no consequences today for anyone in power who does anything that anyone else would consider either immoral, unethical, or even illegal. And if I'm wrong, then show me the person at Citigroup, Morgan Stanley, Chase. Show me the person at Goldman Sachs that has gone to prison for their dirty dealings during the mortgage scandals. Or show me the special ops people who've been challenged for assassinating innocents. Or show me the drone operators who are now being questioned about the ethics and morality of the kids they've killed. Or the 600,000 to 700,000 Americans who die each year at the hands of medicine. Show me which doctor has been accused, lost their license, or challenged. As long as they're practicing within what is considered acceptable medicine, they are virtually indemnified. That said, I would like for you to look at the larger picture and paint the larger picture for us, because this audience may not know that the question of this little girl being taken away, in effect kidnapped, and forcibly drugged, which may kill her, that nobody will have to pay a single penalty in loss of reputation, challenge of jobs, nothing ethical will happen to them or illegal. So let's back it back and say, what's wrong with this picture? What's wrong with the diagnosing of AIDS to begin with? What's wrong with the HIV virus being the only cause of 30 different conditions we call AIDS? What's wrong with the fact that since 1984, when the so-called official cause of AIDS was projected by Robert Gallo, not a single person has been cured by them, and yet they've spent hundreds of billions of dollars and have engaged over 2 million people in their efforts. and yet they claim to be the experts. And as Dr. Rasnick correctly said, if you look at the label inside their HIV antibody test, it said don't use this for diagnosing and trying to detect AIDS. So take us through the fact that the number one cause of death in persons treated with AIDS drugs is liver failure that is only due to the drug's effects, not the virus, if the virus indeed was a primary cause. So let's broaden our picture to look at the larger historical perspective. That way it allows us to understand what's going on with this family.
Well, what's wrong with this picture is absolutely everything, and then some. We've all been saying this to each other. We thought we had seen it all. We had not. This is the most shocking, lurid, truly unfathomable manifestation of this mess that any of us have ever seen. And it's an intersection, a dreadful intersection of the rogue. There's a rogue state, which is the HIV state apparatus, inside the already rogue state, which is Child Protective Services. And there are many Americans out there who know what I'm talking about when I say, leaving aside the AIDS monstrosity, we must, as Americans, work to dismantle Child Protective Services as it exists today, as a criminal rogue agency that, as we now have seen, can go in to a loving home in the United States and kidnap a baby from its mother's arms. Anybody who kidnapped a baby for 1 minute when the mother didn't know where the baby was would serve a prison sentence of I don't know how long. So clearly what we're seeing are behaviors that are labeled deeply criminal in the so-called normal legal world, which are state-sanctioned. In the context of what? In the context of this dreadful clause called medical neglect. Our problem here is we have a wildly flawed, to put it mildly, medical idea or meme or obsession or paradigm that has totally now infected Child Protective Services and the state. This is a problem of the state. This is not a problem of, the Mayo Clinic is not in the business of killing babies. It seems to me that the Mayo Clinic has been helpless to withstand the power of Child Protective Services. What I would love to know, I would love to take some of these people who went out, went into that home, took that baby. You can watch the video. It's unbelievable. I have people from all over the world writing to me, thousands of people coming to the website, and whether they agree or disagree, Duisberg or whatever, they're saying they cannot believe this, and it's waking people up, maybe for the first time, to what we have been saying, which is that there's something really sick going on here. What I would love is to go and put these people under some kind of hypnosis and say, okay, tell us what you're thinking, because I still don't know. I don't know if they are, I don't know what evil is. I don't know. I don't believe that they wish to kill a beautiful baby boy. I believe that they believe that it really is that wrong and bad and dangerous. I mean, because of decades of indoctrination, they must believe that to not bombard a newborn baby with multiple carcinogenic, toxic, so-called antiviral drugs is to endanger them. I mean, they say at point blank, I have the medical records, that if this child is not taken from, that the child's life is in danger. The child, as we've said, was healthy, and he's now on life support. The other thing I want to say in terms of helping the listeners with the big picture is this. The big picture got very dark in the year 1994, and there was a barrier a holy sacred barrier that existed until 1994 that was smashed. It just came down, like the Berlin Wall. Boom, it came down. And what it was the pre-existing belief, not belief, but system and laws and ethics and belief that existed prior to 1994 in obstetrics that had been in place since thalidomide, the thalidomide catastrophe. Thalidomide was never approved, as we know, by the FDA. That was one of their better moments. But it was approved all over Europe, and we had this generation of thalidomide children, and it was admitted that it was thalidomide. So what went up in obstetrics was an absolute sacred law that said you do not give pregnant women anything during gestation because it is just too risky. This was knocked down in 1994 with the advent of yet another flawed, shabby, bought and sold, corrupted study claiming that AZT during gestation could greatly reduce the number of babies who wound up being HIV positive if their mothers were HIV positive. And I wrote a long article about that at the time. And even people on the other side who absolutely believed in HIV and all the rest were devastated at the time. They said, this is a disaster. We can't do this. We cannot start medicating pregnant women. It's just unbelievable. So what I've seen is things being broken down that you just never thought you'd live to see ever. Now, since 94, now I long for that. Those days of the 94 mentality was, yes, they started to get messianic about AZT for pregnant women, but they had not gotten into this utter insanity of bombing the actual newborn babies now with these drugs, never mind multiple drugs, never mind in plastic tubes going straight into the intestinal tract. It is so far gone, it's impossible to find the words. And as for this poor baby in the New York Times that is being hailed as the first or second person on the planet to be cured of HIV, whatever it is, actually Vera Shirov, who's a magnificent woman who runs the Alliance for Human Research Protection here in New York, called me today and we spoke, and she pointed out something that had sort of been lost on me. That baby was seized from its mother, and nobody has seen this baby. We have no idea what the image that they showed was stunning. It came up on Yahoo News last night, and I saw the big story, and it was three young, gleaming Caucasian scientists in white coats staring kind of blissfully into a test tube or a scope, you know, some kind of very scientific image. There was no baby. There was no mother. There are no people. Do you see what I'm getting at? I mean, this is a sci-fi full-on nightmare.
Let's go back to David. David, I'm going to ask you some questions. If you could give us some direct answers on this, I'd appreciate it. All right?
Okay.
Are you familiar with any pregnant women who test HIV positive, who then have babies who are HIV positive, who naturally seroconvert to negative?
In the literature, it's definitely documented.
Okay.
I know one who's had three. Sorry to interrupt.
Go ahead.
I know a woman who is HIV positive who has had three children, and she has never medicated herself or the babies, and they are all HIV negative.
All right. Good. I've looked up the literature. There's a lot of great scientific literature that shows that a very high percentage of babies within the first 18 months who are positive for HIV will convert to seronegative. Why this was not brought up or discovered by the journalist is just, it's just grossly flawed journalism. Secondly, David, are there any drugs currently used or historically used to treat HIV infection, whether it exists or not, as you or others believe, that have been shown to have beneficial impact on the person's immune system without doing harm to their body?
To the immune system, no. There are some acute clinical benefits. For example, the HIV protease inhibitors are very powerful antifungal agents. Unfortunately, they're used at such high doses that they're in the toxic level. So none of these drugs in the long term have any beneficial effects at all.
Okay. Next, would you guesstimate that there have been hundreds of thousands of babies worldwide, if not more, who've been treated using pretty much the standard protocols of multiple anti-HIV drugs who have died, and yet not once do they have the humility to suggest that, well, we may have succeeded here, it's too early to tell, but look at all of our failure.
Yeah, that's hard. The failures are hard to find in the literature. They want to publish successes. About the only thing they will say is that we haven't cured anybody yet, except for what the media says we've cured two people in 30 years or so.
Okay. Is it your understanding that AZT, one of the drugs currently and commonly given to children and others, never had a qualified, accurate, objective, scientifically sound study to prove its safety and efficacy?
That's absolutely true.
And that even some of its overseers and referees were reporting on gross abnormalities and inconsistencies and fraud, including people who died while taking AZT in the clinical study were simply removed from the study. And
yes,
others... go ahead.
Continue. Mm-hmm. I was going to say, even the FDA caught this stuff. The Margaret Fischel study back in the 80s for AZT. It's a total fraud. The AZT, I think, was the only antiretroviral drug that went through a so-called phase 3 clinical trial, and they claim, which means that you actually see whether or not the drug works better in a similar group of people where you don't give them the drug. And they claim that it did. It was totally fraudulent. It was never proved. In fact, ultimately, it was shown that the people that were given with the drug died sooner than the people who were not given the drug.
And that was because we later found out, and I interviewed many of those individuals, that they knew that the placebo was a sugar pill. Therefore, they collected their pills together, tested them. If they tasted them sweet, they threw them away. So they were all using AZT one group.
It was very easy to know who got AZT. The AZT people started getting sick really quick. And they thought that's how you could tell. You cannot take AZT and stay normal. So you cannot continue a blind study unless the placebo also causes a sickness. And when you give a placebo that doesn't cause any harm or any good, theoretically, and you give a very toxic drug, it's very easy to know who's getting the drug. And unfortunately, those gay men, it was virtually all gay men in those early clinical trials, they found out who was getting the toxic drug, the ones who were sick, and they started sharing their drugs with their brothers.
Was it not also the case that they fast-tracked this, and hence it was cut short, the actual study, and so it has never proven itself safe or effective, and yet it has been used in no one knows how many cases because they don't have to report every single case, yet they've been using this experimental drug that is known to be toxic, and it was so toxic that when it was originally created, it was created as a chemotherapy, and it was found to be too toxic to use as a chemotherapy, and yet they allowed it here.
Right. It is so so horrible what this AZT trial ultimately led to. It led to terminating clinical trials prematurely, such that in the 1990s, they stopped doing what's called phase 3 clinical trials for virtually all major drugs. It doesn't matter whether it's AIDS or not. We're now no FDA-approved drug of a major disease actually is ever really tested to see whether or not it actually benefits the patient better than not treating them at all. And that's a direct consequence of those stopping the AZT clinical trials prematurely, and that started a precedent for all these other trials since then, far beyond AIDS.
One final question at this time, David. Is it true or not that since the beginning of the challenge against the official dogma that HIV by itself, this single weak retrovirus, can cause 30 different illnesses, and you take an antibody test, but you can't find the virus, and you can't test for the virus, you can only test for the antibodies. And if you test positive for the antibodies, you're sure to die unless you take all these drugs, and then when you do die, they take no responsibility. And when you and others challenge it, do they not attack you instead of inviting you to debate and share your thoughts in legitimate, open, and professional forms? They try to denigrate you, Peter Duisberg, and Kerry Mullis, who won the Nobel Prize, and others, because they were afraid that if you and others had a form in your ideas about what really caused AIDS, lifestyle, and that it wasn't epidemic, and it wasn't infectious, and that you would kill people faster by giving them these medications and giving them a healthy belief and lifestyle system, that you then became the victims instead of looking at the honest cause of AIDS.
Yeah, well, they can't turn around now. They can't change it. They killed too many people. They spent $350 billion American taxpayer money on this stuff. They can't say, sorry, folks, we've made a mistake. And if RICO dies, they will blame it on HIV. I hope to God RICO is returned to his mother and they take those drugs away from him. But they're already indicating some of the toxic consequences of those drugs and treatments that RICO is suffering. They're already blaming it on HIV.
If we were to take the healthiest Olympic athlete in the world, you know, and we gave them only the HIV drugs for 2 years, do you believe that person would still be an athlete? You'd still even be alive?
It might be alive, but he's not going to be a very happy person.
Okay. Please hold your thoughts. Let us go back over to Andrew. Andrew,
a couple things. I mean, to answer the proximal question, you know, Tommy Morrison was the two-time heavyweight champion of the world, and in 1996, he, before his three contract thing with Don King of Ali fame, you know, he was going to fight Tyson. He was going to fight several other people that year for about a $330 million pot. Well, they accused him of having HIV, and the next year, HCV, and that ruined his life. And when Tommy was imprisoned because, you know, he was so militant about not accepting the fact he was ill, they threw him in prison for about 14 months and, you know, beat him and stuff like that. And, you know, he is still here. He's still with us. He had a mishap last year, but the experiment's been done. But what I wanted to say about your earlier question about has it ever been looked at, a lot of babies and mother pairs, it has. It's in the New England Journal of Medicine. This study was done by, I don't want to mention names since you scolded me before, Gary, but you mentioned Gallo's name, so I'm going to mention Max Exick's name. His name is the first author, I believe. They looked at 875,000 mother-infant pairs in Africa, given nevirapine, another AIDS drug, and 60% or something like that, 68%, after a few weeks were deemed having mutated virus. So, you know, this goes to the heart of biological thought. And, you know, I taught medical students. One of the major problems, that, you know, to embellish something Celia said was, you know, the reason why this is happening at Mayo Clinic and elsewhere is not because they're evil, but because in medical schools we cannot teach biology anymore. We have to teach propaganda and perception management, as I was mentioning earlier. So these 875,000 pairs of infant mother pairs given nevirapine, they said there was a 67 or so rate of mutated virus, and so all of those people now, 67% of 875,000, whatever that number is, are going to die of AIDS because their virus mutated. I mean, this is the kind of logic we get, like with today's news report, you know, in the New York Times. We get this over and over again, these things that don't add up. You have antibodies, but you can't find a virus. It's not a viral illness. The doctors have made this mistake in the past to, again, embellish, not just with thalidomide, but, you know, viral illnesses in the past have been, you know, essentially chasing ghosts and wraiths, I should say. And this is not no exception. And the medical community, you know, when they can't discern what is really wrong, they will always blame a virus. They will always blame a nefarious bacterium or something like that. When, you know, natural methods of detoxification and health and proper nutrition, no vaccines. I mean, Christ, they gave this kid three vaccines the other day. I nearly died when I learned that. Because, you know, these vaccines given to a child in that incredibly vulnerable state, I just can't express to you what that means. Or the transfusions. The transfusions are a direct result of the AZT and the 3TC. That's Mark Weinberg's drug, and I'm sorry to mention another name, but these people are going to have to go someday before a tribunal for, you know, medical treason perhaps or something like that, all right? They need to be stopped, and, you know, we are not going to stop until they stop snatching babies, killing them in their hospitals because they believe in that black people and gay people and other people need to be, it's eugenics. It's a modern form of eugenics. I mean, there's lots of biology textbooks written on eugenics, too. This is another one of them, and so it goes on. So
Andrew,
I just wanted to get that in there. Sorry.
Thank you. I have a thought, and then I'm going to ask each of you for a final closing opinion. In 1993, I took 100 individuals who had had advanced AIDS in our conditions, who had been under treatment by their physicians using holistic, non-invasive therapies. It took a year to organize. We brought together a group of independent scientists to evaluate these cases. They had to have all their medical records, all their blood workups, all their HIV-positive tests. I brought 12 of those individuals that I had worked with for 16 months. I had them in therapy, receiving intravenous vitamin drips at 200,000 milligrams of vitamin C and glutathione pushes and every kind of herb and homeopathic daily, 6 days a week for 16 months. But there were people from all over America who came. We held a press conference. We invited every single member of the American Journal Journalistic Associations, over 7,000. I personally invited one of the top reporters in the New York Post, and we had an independent panel of physicians there to examine the basis. Why would a therapy, if it was the Louise Hay method or if it was another method, Dr. Cathcart, if he was using intravenous vitamin C at 50,000 milligrams, why would that help overcome Kaposi's sarcoma? In any case, not a single member of the American media came. Not a single member of the AIDS mainstream community came. Not a single member of the gay supportive of the AIDS community came. Instead, the room was filled with physicians, the individuals, and we filmed it. Now, these were people who had reversed advanced AIDS. 12 would go on to appear on Tony Brown's Journal on PBS with their medical records, all having been fully vetted. So long before this baby, there were living people engaging in healthy lifestyle who were living proof of long-term survival using natural techniques. But the media showed its bias. The official establishment showed that dare not they open a door that they could not control the truth coming out of. It's much like Fritz Perl, the father of Gestalt psychology, said, a fear of knowing is a fear of doing. So they're not about to talk with Andrew or David or Celia or Peter or any of the other great journalists, scientists, educators, physicians, because they could not honestly and accurately respond to their criticisms. Instead, they go to these cheap theatrics of rushing in, stealing children, kidnapping them, putting them in gulags for kids, these state orphanages, by these absolutely fascistic methods. It is for the American people to become so outraged at this type of totalitarian medicine, that medical McCarthyism, that they demand it stop. Now, if this child is able to be returned to her mother, his mother, and if he's able to be breastfed and given a natural approach, then there's an opportunity for its life to be saved. If not, I'm concerned that a child, like so many before, will die. And as Andrew said, and as David said, they'll blame it on the virus. And there will be no irony lost. And finally, I wrote a paper that took 5 years. It was called Death by Medicine. In that paper, five PhDs and MDs and academics, all together, we proved, using only mainstream science's own statistic, that the number one cause of death and injury in the United States every year was American medicine, iatrogenesis. Some of the figures, even conservative figures, showed 757,000 dead Americans each year because of the medical treatment. They would have been alive without it. And yet, if you look over the last 10 years, that means that between 5 to 7 million Americans have died because of the arrogance, the hubris, the ignorance of American medicine and the politics behind it. And yet there seems to be no irony, no interest in changing it, no curiosity as to how this happens. And yet it's their own figures we're using. This is not a secret. So imagine pitting 700,000 dead Americans, the majority adults, 13 million injured in a given year against a single baby. And now the case is, can we make this baby's plight as powerful as the non-plight, the non-news, the non-effort that is on behalf of the 700,000 Americans who died where no one showed an interest in getting to the truth? Final quick thoughts from Celia Farber.
I feel that what's happening now is we're getting out of our heads and going into our heart. It's plain and simple. People are shocked, heartbroken. I've never seen a response like this in 27 years of covering this. I've never been able to really move people that people are being tortured and killed. I couldn't get through to them. This has gotten through to them, and I'm hopeful.
Good.
I'm hopeful that we're at a turning point, and we're all just we're just praying for Rico.
Thank you, David Rasnick.
Steve, I just want you to know that Rethinking AIDS, the group for Rethinking AIDS, is prepared to send somebody there to support and help you guys. Just let us know, and we'll be there.
Andrew.
Well, I'd like to leave you one final thought, and that is that AIDS is not due to a viral illness. You keep citing that number of 30 diseases. Well, we count 58 previously known illnesses are now under the rubric or under the umbrella of the AIDS diagnosis. And RICO constitutes a very special case, and so does Lindsay, because here we have a woman who has survived a generation because of the enormous intelligence of her parents, of her adopting parents, Steve and Cheryl. And now she is now marked for destruction, because if the baby survives, what is the AIDS establishment going to do, you see? And that's what really concerns me, because we have no jurisdiction or control, and okay, we are going to do everything in our power to make this case a success story.
Andrew Manitosis, thank you for being with us. Final thought from Steve Nagel. Steve, your final words, please.
Well, this has been a tough one for me here. thank you, Dr. Rasnick. We will be in touch. I just put it across that, you know, right now Rico is still alive. So if there's something, you know, if there's something anybody can do out there, I don't know what it is. It's this is really a tough one. We've been through it for 22 years, and now I'm starting over again. So I guess, you know, prayers, and if anybody's got something out there that I haven't thought of, I would just appreciate it. And I thank you for having me on also.
Our pleasure. Steve Nagel, along with his wife Cheryl Nagel, are the grandparents of Rico Martinez Nagel, the son of their adopted daughter Lindsay Nagel, who was adopted by their daughter from Romania, and although testing negative for HIV in Romania, tested positive and arriving in the U.S., and now her son is born. The son's been taken away and is in critical care because of the medical negligence and medical treatment, and we're all concerned. We will continue to give insight and input to Steve and Cheryl in their hour of need. I'm Gary Noll. I want to thank you all for listening to the Progressive Commentary Hour, and we will be posting everything on our website, including contact information. Thank you all for listening.